Let's play a quick game. Think of your favorite fantasy setting. Book, game, movie, whatever. Got one? Was it The Witcher, Lord of the Rings, Skyrim, or maybe you're a masochistic rat lover who picked Warhammer? Look, whatever it is, I'm willing to bet one thing. It's probably some version of medieval European fantasy. Swords and castles, dragons, and vaguely British accents. After all, it's the default flavor of fantasy. So common, we don't even question it, and it really kind of begs the larger question of why that is the default, especially when there have been some really cool and inventive settings inspired by other cultures out there that sadly, or maybe not so sadly depending on your viewpoint, have completely and utterly fallen off the map, with the poster child of this probably being none other than Al-Qadim. Dungeons & Dragons Al-Qadim is a setting where you ride through deserts on flying carpets, bargain with genies in smoke-filled bazaars, and defend your honor with scimitars. It's full of sweeping stories straight out of Arabian Nights, but with a legacy that's, well, extremely messy. And in fact, it's loaded with so much controversy that it's pretty much shaped everything about its place in the D&D lineup. So today, we're going to be diving headfirst into it. We'll explore its criminally underrated and wildly detailed world throughout its multiple denunciations and cancellations, and what future there might be for this, if there in fact is one. So let's pack our camels and venture into one of the most misunderstood corners of the D&D multiverse to answer the question, whatever happened to Al-Qadim? Hi everyone, my name is Otto and welcome to Exits Examined. In this channel, we will be exploring series, franchises, and more after their prime time has seemingly come to an end. If that sounds good to you, there is a like and subscribe button below, and I want to give an enormous shout out, as always, to my patrons who keep this channel running. You guys rock. Also, before we begin, I want to give a quick heads up that my pronunciation for this might not be great. I will try my best, but my best will undoubtedly not be that good. So, you've been warned. Now, at first glance, Al-Qadim looks simple, right? Dungeons & Dragons does Arabian Nights, desert epics, treasure-hunting corsairs, ancient ruined temples, and lots of flowing robes. But the second you start digging in here, boy oh boy, do things get a lot more complicated. Al-Qadim has been called a lot of things over the years. Wildly imaginative, deeply problematic, Arabian Nights cranked up to 11, and to be fair, it's kind of all of these at once. Published in 1992, written by Jeff Grubb, Al-Qadim is way more than just a reskin of the Forgotten Realms in the desert. This is a complete setting. New gods, new magic system, genies, and as you can tell, it's not exactly being subtle with wearing its influences on its sleeves. And those sleeves were embroidered with the word exotic in bold calligraphy, walking headfirst into some extremely thorny territory. Now, to the designer's credit, they were at least very upfront about what they were doing. The first Al-Qadim book literally spells it out, with three sources that inspire the setting. One was historical Arabia, so like just straight up history. Two was legendary Arabia, so heavily inspired by 1001 Nights. And finally is three, which is Hollywood's Arabia. So yeah, they knew they were playing with a mix of authenticity and fantasy, making the whole thing feel a little bit more self-conscious than, say, a random pulp comic from the 1930s, but sometimes just barely. So you can kind of view Al-Qadim as basically one long game of telephone, borrowing elements from tales inspired by tales inspired by tales. And from there, it's easy to see why the discourse around Al-Qadim is so messy. And to its simultaneous credit, but also detriment, incredibly enough, instead of shying away from the tough subjects of history and legends, Al-Qadim truly said f*** it and dove headfirst into some straight up brutal territory. So let's just set the stage here, shall we? First of all, your character can literally become enslaved, which try getting that in Forgotten Realms. And in Al-Qadim, it's not some grim background detail that you read in a sidebar. It is central to the setting. In fact, there are published adventures where the entire premise is that you and your entire tribe are captured, including the men, women, and yes, even the children. Speaking of slavery, Mamluks play a huge part of the setting and are based loosely on the real-world slave military caste and are basically elite warrior slaves complete with ranks, tattoos, and a whole internal hierarchy. So for example, in this world of Al-Qadim, apparently a common saying to a misbehaving child is to tell them, quote, "I'll sell you to the Mamluks," which, geez, right? And I guess is casually tossed out like it's the fantasy equivalent of "I'm turning this car around." Honestly, we're just getting started, because the gender dynamics in these books are the kind of thing that Wizards of the Coast, the current D&D company, would never touch today with a 20-foot stick. In fact, one of the very first passages you're hit with in the original rulebook is a retelling of 1001 Nights, complete with a part where the king murders his cheating wife and her lover in four slices. Infidelity, honor killing, it's all here, often treated as baked-in elements. There's also polygamy for men and women, which again, you're just straight up not going to find in most other D&D settings. Now, although all that sounds a bit intense and sometimes brutal, it is important to take a step back and say that yes, these are in the books, but it's not really the major focus. And in fact, it probably wouldn't be fair to describe Al-Qadim as a hellscape. In fact, the books go out of their way to point out that Zakara in many ways is kind of a paradise. It's a peaceful, lawful land guided by faith and honor. In fact, there are not that many real external threats. Now, sure, you may get your occasional desert giants, but most of these threats are self-contained, and most of the people live relatively good lives. So it's kind of a setting built on contradictions. Peaceful cities with thriving slave markets, enlightened empires with honor killings baked into the moral code, a paradise with a knife, if you will. Okay, that might be a bit pretentious, so let's take a step back and look at Zakara. What is this place anyway? Sure, you got your classic scorching sands and dunes that go on forever with summer days that can push past 130 degrees and nights that are freezing. Maybe I should take back that it's a paradise statement I just made. Anyway, the desert is carved up into all kinds of strange and evocative landscapes, like the weeping desert to the scorch baking stretches of the burning lands and the great anvil and the shimmering sea of salt. But at the center of it all lies the Haunted Lands, an eerie wasteland filled with crumbling ruins from long dead kingdoms. Ghost and mournful winds are basically the local wildlife, and the few people who still live here, yeah, safe to say they're probably not okay. But a perfect place for a dungeon crawl. Now, the cities are just as varied as all of this, with some of them being paradises and others decidedly ranking lower on the paradise scale, but each with their own flavor. Up north, you've got the Corsair domains, pirate towns and ports ruled by sea raiders. Down in the Pearl region, trade cities sparkle with wealth and influence. And my personal favorite, the cities of the ancients, built on the ruins of lost empires and a bit dysfunctional. Interestingly enough, there's entire sections on the internal factions and intrigue in all the courts, and you already know that we got a ton of scheming vizars. Vizars? Vizars? How do you say that word? Wow, that's really embarrassing. It's a vizier. I wonder how many people freaked out in the comments. Okay, going back to it, what's really interesting about all of this is that Al-Qadim isn't like its own separate universe or world or pocket dimension or whatever. Technically, it is part of the Forgotten Realms, just really hard to get to. Now, you can bet your finest camel that the people here are just as wild and varied as the land itself. Zakara is a true melting pot. Elves, half-elves, gnomes, I mean, you could even have barber orcs, all kinds of races mixed together. And just to give you an idea of how detailed these books are, the populations of each city, as well as the percentage of demi-humans in them, are described down to the percentage, which is really cool. Actually, compared to most D&D settings, it's pretty egalitarian, which is a refreshing change of pace and goes to show just how enlightened the people here actually are. Now, this does kind of make sense, because the Land of Fate, as it's known, is all one country, but it's important to say that it's not all kumbaya. The social fabric here is a little complicated and basically split between two kinds of people, the nomads known as Al-Badia and the city folk called Al-Hadhir. each thinking that they are both obviously superior than the others. Now, the nomads live in the harshest parts of Zakara, and they migrate, raid, and swear by their camels to they call the, quote, ships of the desert, which I love. The city folk, on the other hand, are the artisans, merchants, craftsmen, leading more settled, structured lives. But to the nomads, they're soft, confined, and missing the wild freedom of the dunes. But the joke's actually on both of them, because the differences between a village dweller and a city aristocrat aren't as huge as you might think. They speak the same language and have a lot of similar beliefs, because hospitality is a big thing here, and there are super detailed rules laid out. So basically, if you eat from someone's house, you are honor bound to be safe there. Now, speaking of honor, honor is kind of the heartbeat of the entire society, and this comes out in all types of ways. So, for example, everyone knows their place, from the lowliest beggar to the gaudiest of rulers, and you can bet we got some extremely gaudy ones in here. Now, this place in society is called station, and it shapes how others see you. It's usually inherited, but can be earned through reputation, or, perhaps more importantly, lost through disgrace like theft, or yes, of course, slavery. And yeah, all of this shows up in everyone's favorite topic, gender dynamics. And purity is a massive deal, like someone might literally kill you and your lover if it's compromised type of deal. Interestingly enough, veils are in here, but it's something for both men and women. That all being said, nomadic women have a very different setup. Out in the desert, everyone has to pull their weight after all, so women tend to live more or less like men, dressing practically, and even taking part in combat. Now, my friends, we have not even touched on religion, which, boy oh boy, you can bet is a thing here, and it permeates pretty much every corner of daily life in Zakara. The long and short of it is this. Fate, yes, fate with a capital F, chose a young girl to receive divine knowledge. This girl, later known as the Loregiver, wrote down a bunch of sacred scrolls containing this wisdom. But instead of handing them out immediately, she stashed them in a cave because humanity was not ready for them, apparently. Now, centuries later, humanity probably still wasn't ready for them because there were wars, plagues, famines, etc., etc. But anyway, a young man found the scrolls and used them to unite the lands, which, yeah, if that sounds a little on the nose with real-world parallels, you're not wrong. But all of that begs a question. What actually is fate? After all, the whole setting is named after it. Well, according to the lore, fate is described as, quote, like a goddess, yet not a goddess, which, whatever that means. Now, a lot of fans speculated that she's an overgod, a kind of cosmic being who exists above the regular pantheon. And yes, there is, in fact, a whole pantheon situation in here. In fact, a big one. There are pages and pages describing each god. The goddess of truth, the god of independence, and then you've got my personal favorite, the forgotten savage gods. These are ancient deities from before Fate's time. So we got Lotha, a human-headed spider worshipped by evil elves. Or my favorite, Sajar, this obese, hippo-headed river god, which Dark Souls 2 did you call? But anyway, this is all just scratching the surface. There are detailed descriptions of temples, religious customs, in-universe stories about the Loregiver, and even a full phrasebook. And if you're thinking, wow, that is a lot of specific day-to-day detail, yeah, you are absolutely right. This setting goes hard on world building. Food, clothes, furniture, etiquette, it's all there, down to even things like the different breakfast for rich and poor folks. So you can probably tell that this world is obsessively detailed and does a lot of things that no other D&D setting was really doing. It basically asks the players to care about culture, etiquette, spiritual beliefs in a genre that usually revolves around stabbing goblins. But that is not to say that there is no goblin stabbing in here. Now, speaking of the goblin stabbing, you might be wondering about races you can play as. Now, sadly, Al-Kadim doesn't get as weird or wild as something like Dark Sun. You're not going to be rolling up as a mantis man in a slave pit. But if you want to play a dwarf, elf, gnome, halfling, half-elf, or human, go for it. You've got all your standard options. But hey, what Al-Qadim lacks in wild and wacky races, it more than makes up for in the class department. You got the Corsair, Camel Desert Rider, and naturally there's also room for assassins with direct nods to the Hashishin. Now, if you're boring and want to stick to your regular D&D stuff, sure, you can do that too. You can play as an Outland Warrior, which is a way to import a character from a more traditional D&D setting like the Forgotten Realms and drop them into Zakara like some confused fantasy tourist, which works great for fish out of water stories. And of course, this wouldn't be Al-Qadim without some seriously thematic over-the-top magic. Now, yes, you've got your standard wizards and sorcerers, sure, but the real stars of the show, in my humble opinion, are the Shahir. They're basically a genie wizard and can summon genies, bind genies, trap them, or call in favors. And if they're powerful enough, they can even score an audience with the rulers of the djinn. Which, by the way, yes, there are rulers of the djinn. And speaking of that, the genie lore in this setting is not just a footnote, it's a whole thing. We're talking about pages and pages breaking down the elemental hierarchies, all with their own complex politics, cultures, powers, and rules for summoning, bargaining, trapping, or if you're feeling lucky, asking for wishes. Just remember, these are not your friendly Robin William genie types. They are high-tier, prideful ancient beings who are just as likely to wipe your city off the map as grant your wish, and they will absolutely twist your words if you slip up. Speaking of that, let me tell you about a little bedtime story straight from the setting. Now, once there was a rebellious desert sheik who once tried to conquer the greatest city in all Zakara. His army made it to the outskirts until they were met by a lone Shahir. The Shahir politely warned the sheik to turn back. Now, the sheik was the kind of guy who doesn't take advice and rode him down and killed him on the spot. And that's when the genies showed up, and then proceeded to obliterate the sheik's army, each competing with each other to see who could kill the most soldiers in the flashiest way possible, which were presumably both equal parts horrifying and hilarious. Now, all of that may sound cool, but don't worry if you're a boring, regular spell-slinging wizard. There's still plenty of fun to be had in the magic department. Al-Qadim is full of spells tailor-made for the desert and its dangers, and some of them are just straight-up awesome. You got spells that let you summon a sand lion or turn sand into a bladed weapon, and if that's not enough for you, you can even enlarge a desert creature, because if there's one thing worse than a giant scorpion, it's an even bigger giant scorpion. As far as proficiencies, you got flavorful and functional ones like desert survival, and also I can't tell you how much I love this, but begging is one of the skills, which narratively and mechanically I feel like I would excel at after asking people to join my Patreon every week. In a similar vein, there's also haggling, which again is a whole thing in the setting, with detailed mechanics and all types of fun magical artifacts to buy. So that all sounds fun and great and dandy, right? But now we've got to talk about the elephant in the room. Because let's be real, anytime someone so much as mentions Al-Qadim, someone else immediately climbs up on their car and screams problematic at the top of their lungs. Now, normally I'd steer clear of this kind of thing because it just always turns into a mess. But the truth is, every time this setting comes up, this conversation comes with it. And spoiler alert, it's also a big reason why Wizards is probably never going to bring back the setting in the modern day. So yeah, let's rip this band-aid off. So to sum up the main criticisms of Al-Qadim over the years, a lot of people feel like it parodies real-life historical cultures, often simplifying them or getting key aspects wrong, especially considering none of the original authors were from these cultures. There's also frequent mention of exoticism and Orientalist cultural appropriation, the aspects of slavery, honor killing for infidelity, and some of the gender dynamics like ideas around purity, and it's all no surprise that the setting has rubbed some folks the wrong way. Now, there's actually been podcasts and video essays reading through this moment by moment and critiquing it through this lens. I do think it's important to mention that a lot of these criticisms weren't at the time of release, and many of these happened relatively recently in the past past 5 to 7 years, which is relevant because it's unlikely that Wizards will touch this while all of this is still relatively hot to touch, so to speak. Now, as with any conversation like these, there's also been backlash to that criticism. Now, some argue that these cultural depictions aren't meant to be historically accurate, similar to how most European medieval fantasy settings certainly aren't either. And after all, the creators of Al-Qadim are generally seen as not having intended racism. In fact, actually going pretty far into research and fact-checking of the cultures that they were basing Al-Qadim off of. Other people point out that the setting reflects its time, and it's unreasonable to judge older works strictly by modern standards, and every new generation won't agree with the sensibilities of past ones, and oh my god, hopefully future generations look upon our current time with respect and patience. Now, no matter how you do feel about it, I do think it's reductive to label the entire Al-Qadim setting as simply racist and shut the book there. Yes, there are undoubtedly moments that are not great, but there's also a lot of beautiful, creative, and genuinely cool material in here. Now, that doesn't erase the issues, of course, but like any piece of media, it's nuanced. I know that's crazy to say because the word nuanced often gets lost online these days, but it's impossible to describe Al-Qadim in one sentence. And if you do describe it in one sentence, at least read the entire book before making your own judgment, which I swear should be like a punishable law. If you critique something, you should read the entire book before you critique it. Okay, hopping off my soapbox. The point I'm getting at is that there is a lot to work with in here, with some really cool opportunities, and I do personally think it would be a shame to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, and just throw out the entire thing. Okay, but let's put a pin in that now and move on to the not less confusing world of how Al-Qadim fits into the larger history of D&D and TSR. And to understand how Al-Qadim happened, we gotta go way, way back, baby. So, for the uninitiated, Dungeons & Dragons launched in 1974 under a company called TSR. Now, this might shock some people, but the original version of the games was very bare bones, so no setting, no story, definitely no overarching meta plot, because, well, back in the day, they expected you to do that yourself, whippersnapper. And after all, what's the point of a game using your imagination if you aren't, you know, using your imagination? But TSR exploded in popularity throughout the late 70s and 80s, doubling in size some years. And with the introduction of story-driven settings like Dragonlance, things definitely started to change, and they started cranking out new products at what can only be described as an unhinged pace. Now, at one point, they were releasing new settings and supplements in the double digits every year, and let's just say it was a mess. The rapid-fire publishing strategy was just not sustainable and eventually led to TSR crashing hard, with everybody's favorite company, Wizards of the Coast, swooping in to buy it all in 1997. But the beautiful silver lining of this is that during those chaotic years, we got some of the most beloved D&D settings of all time. Because essentially the team was just throwing settings at the wall to see what would stick, and they were taking some big swings. Out of that corporate dumpster fire, we got some of the undisputed coolest settings and out of left field settings in D&D, like Planescape, Dark Sun, and yes, Al-Qadim. So as far as how Al-Qadim actually came to be, it was actually all very deliberate. Now, originally it was dreamed up by Jeff Grubb, and as you could probably tell, the research went way deeper than you might expect. We're talking about detailed write-ups on how to ride a camel, entire sections on how coffee is brewed in Al-Qadim. Now, Grubbs wasn't new to this. He was a TSR veteran with credits on The Forgotten Realms, Spelljammer, and Dragonlance, and interestingly, while Al-Qadim was in the works, it kind of had a low-key sibling rivalry with Dark Sun. After all, it was the other desert-themed setting. But from the beginning, they had a plan. Al-Qadim was never meant to be a sprawling beast like the Forgotten Realms. It was a limited-run setting by design. And actually, Al-Qadim kept things pretty modest, with just 14 products in total, and the whole thing was supposed to last about 2 years. Tight, clean, no endless sprawl, which was a rare thing indeed for a 90s D&D. Now, the whole thing kicked off with Arabian Adventures, which dropped in 1992, and this was actually an accessory for a D&D 2nd edition. It gave you new character kits, spells, gear, and all the basic flavor was there. And the visual style of the books is very restrained. It had some great pictures, but nothing as intricate as the likes of Planescape. But this would change eventually when we got the Bible of the setting, The Land of Fate, in 1992, and if you're interested in the setting, this is definitely the one for you, because this is the full tour guide to Zakara, wrapped in richly illustrated maps and lore. We even got a monstrous compendium for Al-Qadim, which had camels you could fight, which I don't know, I can't express how much I love that. Which, I'm not endorsing camel violence, by the way. Anyway, getting back to it, from there, TSR got to work pumping out Al-Qadim adventures over the next few years. And there were definitely some standouts, like Golden Voyages in 1992, leaning heavily into seabound adventures with treasure maps, mysterious islands, and all kinds of nautical chaos, of course inspired by Sinbad. Then you got Assassin Mountain, which, as you can probably guess, dove deep into the lore of the fantasy assassins, pulling straight from the legend of the Old Man of the Mountain. Now, there were some other great books in here later, like The City of Delights in 1993, but by 1994, TSR was slashing product lines left and right, and unfortunately, Al-Qadim was one of the casualties, which is a shame, because they were just starting to expand beyond the core of Zakara. Now, the final official product, Caravans, came out in 1994, marking the end of Al-Qadim's third year. But actually, at one point, TSR even asked for a roadmap for year 4, and the idea was to keep building out the world, and one of the planned supplements was going to be called Terror of the Yachtmen, which honestly sounds kind of amazing. But we now know that TSR ultimately passed on year 4, and after that, Al-Qadim just sort of vanished. Turns out that even though the setting was no longer being published, it actually had a bit of a second life through the RPGA, that's D&D's Organized Play Wing. Now, throughout the 90s, Al-Qadim adventures were still being run at conventions, and out of that came the final book, Reunion. Now, the designers had played in one of these RPGA tournaments and thought, hey, we can make something even better ourselves. So that's exactly what they set out to do, and they made an adventure that could work as a one-shot. And this was called Reunion, which, by the way, this is that adventure I was talking about earlier where your entire family is enslaved. Now, that truly was the end of it, though, because after that, it was mostly silence. Aside from a few scattered articles in Dragon Magazine, etc., etc., Al-Qadim mostly just faded into obscurity. Now, sure, Zakara still gets name-dropped occasionally as part of the Forgotten Realms, and even got a little nod in the Elemental Evil Players campaign for D&D 5e in 2015, but beyond that, this setting seems a bit dead. And we'll talk about this more later, but the chances of Wizards making more products in the near future are next to zero. Now, because Al-Qadim was one of the lesser expanded D&D settings, tragically I might add, it didn't get anywhere near the same adaptation treatment as Forgotten Realms or even Planescape. In fact, this is the first setting I covered that doesn't even have a single novel, which is honestly a shame because Al-Qadim has the kind of flair and flavor that could make for some great stories. That all being said, it did get one video game, Al-Qadim the Genie's Curse, released in 1994. You play as a strapping, and I do mean strapping, young Corsair. Seriously, he looks like he walked out of an 80s romance novel. But anyway, just before his wedding, a magical storm hits, and his bride-to-be is swept overboard, and your family gets blamed for the disaster. Oh, and by the way, someone's taking control of your family's genie, so now it's up to you to find your bride-to-be, clear your family's name, and stop an evil scheme. You know, classic Tuesday. The game itself is more of an adventure puzzle hybrid than a full RPG. Kinda think Zelda, with the combat in real time, and technically, it does have stats, but they don't really matter. It also had some questionable stealth sections, some actually really solid puzzles, and a few genuinely fun set pieces. You even get your own ship, though sadly, sailing isn't really like a big part of the gameplay. It's more of a glorified cutscene vehicle. Still, the world building is surprisingly faithful. You got the essential Al-Qadim elements, and it has a fantastic soundtrack, and the pixel art is really good for the time. But despite the janky combat and occasional clunkiness, the Genie's Curse is pretty much the only way to explore Al-Qadim in digital format, which is wild because the setting is begging for a modern game. Give me an open world adventure where you're summoning genies, racing across the desert on a camel, flying on carpets, running pirate raids on the high seas. I mean, I would even take a faithful indie remake of the Genie's Curse, but with actually sailing mechanics, something like Assassin's Creed Black Flag. I don't know, there's definitely something in here. But alas, I think it's very likely we're not going to get another Genie's Curse. And that's the real curse here, huh? huh? And speaking of why we're not going to get another one, let's talk about where Al-Qadim stands today. Well, the subcontinent of Zakara technically still exists in the Golden Child of D&D's Forgotten Realms. It hasn't been retconned or erased, but there's also been no source books, no reboots, or even a re-release of the old box sets. And if you read any of the critiques that have resurfaced over the years, you can probably guess why. Let's just say that Wizards of the Coast has been very hesitant to touch anything that might spark controversy, especially in a setting as deeply steeped in cultural pastiche as this one. Although that being said, there was actually talk on Dragon Talk podcast in 2014 from some people who worked at Wizards about how they were hoping to bring the setting back, but since then actually they've all left the company. And in today's D&D landscape, where safer, more popular settings like the Forgotten Realms, Ravenloft, and even Spelljammer are dominating the stage, a full revival of Al-Qadim seems, let's be honest, extremely unlikely. Most modern D&D settings have never even heard of Al-Qadim, let alone played it. That said, it's not like it's been totally forgotten. There is still a small, dedicated fan base out there that's keeping the flame alive. Is it a huge underground movement like Mystara? Not really. The online communities are pretty tiny, and the last time I checked, the Al-Qadim subreddit had maybe 300 people, but there is passion here. The biggest and arguably best-known fan project is Adventures in the Land of Fate, which is basically a 5e-compatible reimagining of Al-Qadim available on DM's Guild, and honestly, it's pretty impressive, and manages to preserve a lot of the original setting's flavor and charm while also updating the tone and presentation to be more in line with modern sensibilities. There's some great art, and much of it is actually drawn from Creative Commons sources to my understanding, but the whole thing just feels like a real labor of love. If you're curious about exploring Zakara through a modern D&D lens, this is probably the best place to start, and I'll drop a link below. There's also been a bunch of other fan-made adventures out there which are totally free. So yeah, Al-Qadim might not be making any official comeback anytime soon, but it's not like it's totally buried under the dunes, so to speak. And in a way, it's kind of amazing that this odd little setting has managed to stick around at all. And who knows, D&D is bigger and more mainstream than it's ever been, thanks to things like Critical Role, Baldur's Gate 3, and a huge wave of new fans coming in every year. So in the future, who knows what's gotta happen? Taste change, leadership changes, maybe someday someone at Wizards or another company will decide it's time to revisit the Land of Fate. And hey, even if we don't get a full revival, a few respectful nods would go a long way. Because for all its flaws, and sure, there are some, Al-Qadim was bold, flavorful, and just unlike anything else TSR was doing at the time or really since. They truly just don't make settings like this anymore. And at the very least, it does not deserve to be forgotten. Thank you so much for watching. I really appreciate all the support, especially from my incredible patrons who keep this channel alive and running. If you want to find out more info on ways to support me and join the channel's Discord, you can find a link to the Patreon below. As always, if you ever have any suggestions about what you want me to cover next, please drop a comment. It's always really cool to hear what you guys have to say. Anyway, thanks so much. I hope you have a great day, and I'll see you next time. Bye.